Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I am really excited today. I love my show, and I love the people I get to chat with. Today, I get to welcome Mitch Matthews to the show. Now, Mitch is a very interesting guy. He is a leading authority on innovative thinking, human performance, and goal achievement. He has also worked with leaders and teams from organizations like NASA, Disney, Pioneer, and the Principal Financial Group. He also works one-on-one with leaders as an elite executive coach. Plus, he's created a life and business coach training program that has been utilized around the globe. I mean, literally utilized around the globe. So in 2001, Mitch's first book called Ignite, A Little Book to Spark Your Big Dreams, was published. And he is actually going to be giving away two copies today. If you're on Facebook at all, you know what the rules are. He wants you to come into the chat room and post your dream, whether it's business, travel, financial, whatever it is, and we'll talk about that. In 2006, Mitch and his wife started something called the Big Dream Gatherings, and these free events have helped thousands of people to dream bigger and in many cases get the boost that they needed to get their big dreams accomplished. Now, we're having a little bit of trouble getting Mitch on the line. We're kind of waiting on him, so I will just kind of keep describing to you what this radio is going to be about. He says he's trying. We may have to stop and start over again, and I hate to do that. I don't know what's going on. I really hope we don't have to end this episode because it's really going to be a great one. So he's trying to get in again now, so we shall see what happens and see if we can get him in. And not yet. Well, anyway, if you're on Facebook, we'll see while he keeps trying to get in. If you're on Facebook at all, you can see what Mitch has done. He has said that he's going to give away the two books, Ignite, and the rules are that he wants you to come in to the chat room and just let you know what, you know, let him know what the big dreams are. List them. He wants to know if they're big dreams, small dreams, travel dreams, relationship dreams, education, anything is a go, whatever you want to talk about. So I am going to put us on mute for just a minute and see if I can find Mitch and see what's going on. Hold on just a second, please. Okay, we're going to try to bring him in on the host line and see if that works. If that doesn't work, then we're then going to just hang up and start all over again and hope for the best. Oftentimes, though, when you do that, because the episode has already been scheduled, it may not show back up again. But we'll give him just another couple of minutes and see if he can get lined up and get in, and then we'll start this whole rock and roll process. But anyway, if you are not familiar with Mitch Matthews, go to MitchMatthews.com. He is, Oh, I hear somebody. Mitch, are you there? Oh, this is disappointing. I have to say, this is, I hope we are not just out of luck, but maybe if he's not extremely busy, we can do it in about an hour if that will work for him. So, but if you go to MitchMatthews.com, you'll find that Mitch is an inspirational speaker. He is a motivating, captivating, inspirational speaker. His insights and energy are contagious. He's actually a really funny guy. I've seen him on, you know, several different venues. He's really an intriguing, very funny guy. But he's able to take the material and feed it to the audience a spoonful at a time so that each key component is easily digestible and easily put into action. So let's see if we can get him in here. You know what? We're having no luck at all. Again, this is very, very disappointing, but he is just not able to get in. Well, he is trying the original number. Darn it. Well, I'm glad that's all I said. I could have said something worse. Let's keep trying. We'll see if we can get him in just a few. So anyway, if I had somebody else to chat with, I would. But in the meantime, this is what's going on with your partner in Success Radio. We have a lot of things that are we have a lot of great guests coming up. We have a lot of great guests who have been with us in the past and who will return. Because what happens with this show is, more often than not, we just get to chatting and we don't even get to cover the talking points. We just don't get there. So a lot of them are, you know, very gracious about wanting to come back and say, sure, we'll be back at another time. If you go to yourpartnerinsuccessradio.com, there's a complete lineup all of this year's past guests and all of 2011, 2010, 2009. Most of these episodes are evergreen, meaning the information that we get from our guests is just so timely and makes so much sense at the time that it continues to make sense even then. And I think I may have somebody popped up. We'll see if that is Mitch. Mitch, is that you?
Hey, Denise, this is Ben.
Hey, Ben, what's going on?
I don't know. I don't know if he's trying to call in and can't get through or what the deal is.
We've been trying. I'm going to put you on hold. I think I see his number show up. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch?
Hey, Denise, how are you?
I'm fine. I just took a call from another caller and said, I don't know what's going on. I don't either. I'm so
glad
you're
here. I apologize.
Here.
I tried from my landline and it didn't work, so I'm calling from my iPhone. So hopefully it will be a good enough connection. I so apologize.
Well, I have just been working the crowd.
I don't doubt it at all. I figure we could maybe build up the tension and the excitement or something, you know, some sort of publicity stunt or something.
Right.
I so apologize. Being late is one of my worst. I hate that. It pings me and all that, so I so apologize.
It wasn't you. It's a technical kerfluffle, which is a very polite way of saying what I really want to say. But,
well,
I love
kerfluffle, although I can never remember how to spell it. So, and I never want to be a part of a kerfluffle. So,
Well, I am so glad you're here because, I mean, I was chatting away and then I finally resorted to going, you know, to my past list of guests and seeing. I was just like, okay.
Yeah, who can we call?
Who
might be open on a Monday or on a Friday? Exactly.
No. You know, next I was going to do my famous hula hoop trick. So.
Oh, there you go. I love it.
I am so glad you're here. Thank you so much for being so patient and trying so hard to get in.
You bet. No problem. It's an honor. I tell you what, you do great work, so it's just an honor to get to be a part of it.
Oh, thank you. I mean, that is so sweet. You know, honestly, all I do is I just ask questions and then I listen. And the best part about it is I learn from you guys. So, you know, I don't even know what it is that I do. I just go, really? I mean, I ask questions, and at the end of it, I'm walking around going, huh, now that was cool. I just learned something I never would have thought of. So,
well, I'll tell you what,
the honor
is mine. You know, the best conversationalists are the people that, you know, are willing to ask a good question and then listen, and there's so much wisdom in that. So I so appreciate your approach, and I also appreciate your humility because there's a whole lot of things that you do that goes beyond asking questions. But I sure appreciate your humility in that.
Well, thank you so much. I was talking about your book, and I was telling people that there are a few rules that they need to kind of jump into the chat room and ask some questions or even on Facebook. And what I didn't get to because I was a bit of a wreck, was that in
exactly. Where is my God?
I mean, I said, at one point I said, oh, darn, and then I instantly thought to myself, is that all I said? I hope that's all I said. Oh, God, because I can curse in two languages. I try not to.
This is a family show.
Yeah. But in 2006, this is what I didn't get to tell the audience, I don't think, that you and your wife started something called the Big Dream Gatherings. And I have to admit, I'm fascinated with that. And these free events have helped thousands of people dream bigger and in many cases get the boost that they needed to get their big dreams accomplished. Before I get too deep into, you know, all of that, because I have a ton of questions, can you tell people a little bit about yourself and where they can find you?
Absolutely. I'd be honored to. People can find me at MitchMatthews.com. It's M-I-T-C-H, Matthews, M-A-T-T-H-E-W-S. We spent our entire marketing budget on coming up with that domain name. I'll tell you what, that was a tough one. so they can go there and kind of find out all the different things that we do. But basically what it boils down to is we help people and organizations to dream bigger and to achieve more. So under that, we really, you know, work with innovation, we work with creative thinking, we work with goal attainment, but really when you boil it down in what we do, we just help people to dream bigger and achieve more. And so we do that. So they can find out more about what we're up to at MitchMatthews.com. They could also visit BigDreamGathering.com and find out a little bit more about those events and having us come and do one, that type of thing. But it really is the Big Dream Gathering's a fun story just because we never really intended for it to turn into what it's turned into. It was truly a happy accident.
And, you know, sometimes the best things that happen to you are happy accidents. They come, I have found this in my life, they come because you have a thought and you go, huh, that just feels right. And then you talk about it and you share it. And other people start giving you the validation that you were right. It just felt right. And then it just grows legs from there, doesn't it?
It really does. It's so true. It's so true. And some of the best. So the best things, you never really intend for them to happen, or you do something out of total and utter desperation or whatever, and it just works. And you know, we love the fact that it's, you know, they're fun events. They're, it's just amazing. But honestly, you start getting addicted to not only seeing people dream, but also encourage each other to dream. And that's just, it's just fun and addictive.
Mitch, do you find that some people just don't know how to dream?
Absolutely. I mean, in some ways, I think one of the biggest crises that our country is facing currently, and really, you know, I got a sense of this. I've had a sense of this for a while, but we've started to do these big dream gatherings, and we can kind of tell everybody what those are here in a little bit. But we started to do these big dream gatherings more and more on college campuses, partly because the colleges love it. They, you know, they love to, you know, see the students dreaming. But one of the things that I think, again, it kind of gave us a vantage point that's kind of unique as we to this crisis. I think this impending crisis is that. I think our college students especially, but I think us as a country, we're in danger of losing our ability to dream. And, you know, that's what this country was built on. But, you know, as we've gone around with these college students, you know, these college campuses and interacted with the students, so many of them are afraid. They don't know that they can give themselves permission to dream. They, in some ways, don't even know where they'd start. And, you know, some of them have just kind of landed on, I just want to get a job, you know, and those types of things. And it's just amazing. It's an incredible privilege to get to go and just start to plant seeds with college students, but then also in the communities that we do these in and some of the other things that we do as far as plant seeds of, you know, giving people permission to dream. And sure, you know, everybody, you know, we need to eat. We need to have a roof over our heads. So sometimes we can have our dream job right out of the gates. Or sometimes our, you know, dream job is what we get to do every day. But sometimes the dreams that we need to pursue are dreams that we need to pursue on the side or as a project or as an experiment for a while. And, you know, kind of giving people freedom to be able to dream and kind of experiment with some of those dreams as opposed to feeling like they need to make a career out of those dreams or, you know, those types of things right away. And it's just amazing to see what happens when they give themselves permission to dream on the career front, but also in other areas of their life. You know, we had one this week and, you know, some of the students, interestingly enough, one of the students, I think one of my favorite stories from this week is a student posted a dream that she wanted to be a photographer. And she listed one of the things that she still needed was a good mentor. Well, we had a local photojournalist at that that event from the Des Moines Register. And, you know, she wrote down, you know, I'd mentor you. You know, that's my day job. I'd mentor you. And little did she know that, you know, this dreamer didn't even know that this photojournalist was a Pulitzer Prize winning photojournalist.
Oh.
You know, and so it's just incredible to kind of see some of the boosts that people have had,
right,
just from writing their dream down, but also from some of the help that they get from time to time.
And, you know, it's so funny while you were saying that one of the things that she, you know, needed that was still on her list, I was thinking it was going to be equipment. I didn't even think that she would have, I'm just going to say it, sense enough to ask for a mentor.
Right.
Because
it really is impressive. And it's one of those that, you know, again, we have this very interesting vantage point in regards to, especially when we do these on college campuses, that to see in some ways, you know, what happens when, especially college students, but any of us give ourselves or start to give ourselves permission to dream. Because it does start to open it up. But one of the other things we really challenge people on is that, you know, we ask people to describe one of their big dreams, and they can post as many as they want to, but we give them dream sheets. So it's kind of one dream per sheet. And then on the sheets, we ask them, you know, what are a few things you need and what are a few things that you have in place? And we always challenge people to say, you know, there's a good chance that one of the things you're going to say you need is money. And what
Right.
we do is we challenge you to think beyond that. You know, what are some other things that you need? Sure, you may need money, but what are some other things that you need? And what are some, you know, in some ways with that, then we always encourage people to say, those are the places that you can get started. Those are the places where you can start to experiment. Because so many of us, and I've fallen into the same place where you start to set a new goal, you have a new dream, and maybe that, you know, that wall of, I don't have enough funds, I don't have enough money to do this, gets in the way and it shuts you down. And that's where people stop. And that's where we encourage people to say, okay, you know, what are some of those other things you need? What are some ways to experiment? What are some other ways you can get started? Even if you only have two pennies to rub together,
mm-hmm.
what are some ways you can experiment and get started? And so, you know, these students just take that and run with it. And, you know, it's just amazing to see what happens when they do.
Mitch, do you find that some of these students, I mean, money is always a problem for most people. And there's pretty much a way around it. I mean, my attitude is look around your surroundings. Most of us, including college students, have so much junk. We just have so much stuff. Craigslist, honestly, get a box of stuff together, put it on, you know, put it on Craigslist and start getting rid of some of that stuff. You can find a little money there. But my true question there is, if money is the thing that stops them, what are some of the more innovative ways that they've kind of gotten around that you've seen? Do you have any
well,
stories
one of
you
the
can
things
share?
That's interesting. Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the things is that you know, we talk about, especially with the Big Dream Gathering, you know, it kind of creates this platform where, you know, again, people can post their dreams, but then also potentially connect with others. And I think one of the things that happens in us when we start to think about some of our big dreams and some of our big goals is, you know, we know maybe some of the things that we have in place. And when we start to think about some of those things we still need, whether it's money, whether it's resources, whether it's ideas, the interesting thing about that is that, you know, in our culture, but in a lot of different cultures, basically if you're in need of help, that somehow denotes weakness, right? Mm-hmm. If you're in need of help, it's almost something you should hide. Because that means that maybe you don't have it together or that you're falling short in some way. And so there's this tendency to hide those things. And one of the things that, you know, again, we found from these big dream gathering experiences is that in some ways, you know, we challenge people to, instead of thinking of those things that they need as something they need to hide, what we encourage people to do is to walk around with those things almost like they're holding a puzzle piece. Because one of the things we found is that really those represent opportunities for what we call complementary dreams, where two people might have dreams and all they're really in need of is each other. I think one of my favorite examples of this, it didn't really even happen at the Big Dream Gathering, but basically one gal got really excited. We were going to be doing a big dream gathering in her community. She got really excited about it, let us know, but also let us know she was a little concerned because she was pregnant. and that she was due right around the day we were going to be doing the big dream gathering. And so she started to get, you know, she was excited but concerned. And sure enough, the day of the big dream gathering, she shoots me an email saying, "Mitch, I'm excited about this, but I can't come. My water just broke."
Ooh.
And I'm thinking to myself, you're writing me an email and your water just broke. Her husband was had to be somewhere like, honey, for real, drop it, you know. But she said, would you post this dream? And so we did, and that, you know, that was great. But what the you know, the real magic of the story is that she had the baby, yay, and everything was, you know, happy, healthy. She was all good. And in the process of friends coming to see the baby and her still being in the hospital and things, one friend came and spent some time with her in the hospital room. And everybody else had kind of cleared out, so they had some quiet time. And finally, this friend knew that, you know, the gal had wanted to go to the big dream gathering. So she said, so were you able to go to that dream thing? And she said, no, I wasn't. And then her friend brilliantly just said, so what was the dream? What were you going to post? And she said, well, you know, I do my art and stuff. And she was an artist. And she's like, I kind of thought that it'd be fun to create a local website where local artists could post their art and we could help them sell it. And, you know, it would be a place I could sell my art, but then, you know, it would just be something local. Mm-hmm. And it was great because she was like, Caroline, you know, that was the gal that had just had the baby. She's like, Caroline, you know what my big dream is? And she was like, no. And she's like, I want to build websites. She's like, how have we not talked about this before, you know?
Yeah.
And so they hatch a plan right there in the hospital room to start working on it together. And they do. And they take it all the way through to launching a website where they now sell some of their own artwork and some other folks' artwork and those types of things. And, you know, it's not become Google or, you know, Pinterest by any means, but it's been something that they got to work on together. And really, that wouldn't have happened. Yeah, and actually made some nice money from it, from what it sounds. But that wouldn't have happened had either one of them kind of hid what it is they wanted to do or kind of what they still needed. It only happened because they walked around and said or were willing to talk about those things, the dreams as well as the things they still needed. And then when they did, those puzzle pieces locked together and made both their dreams possible. And that's what we see so much. And, you know, it doesn't have to happen at the big dream gathering. It can really happen when somebody's got enough boldness to talk about one of their big dreams, but also ask maybe a friend, okay, what are some of your big dreams? What do you still need? And a lot of times, you know, you can uncover those complimentary dreams, especially if you're willing to walk around as if the things you need are puzzle pieces as opposed to a weakness that you should hide.
And see, I have a mental image. I think in images, so I tend to speak in images. And I have mm-hmm. this puzzle piece. I'm telling you, it's in my left hand. It's between my thumb and my forefinger, and I'm holding it over my head.
Awesome.
I swear I am. It's crazy, but
I love
and
it.
And that's going to be with me for the rest of the day. I'm going to be walking around with that puzzle piece over my head and wondering what the complementary pieces are that go, because it's not an end piece. I already made that decision
while
you were talking. Yeah, because I mean,
that's
you see
awesome.
Where I'm
it's
going
right
with
there
that.
In the middle somewhere. Exactly
it's,
right.
That's exactly right, and I want to be able to, you know, slot things into all four sides. That gives me a lot more options.
Exactly, and that is the beautiful thing, you know. And it's one of those things where, you know, you deal in a business of interacting with human beings. We deal in a business of interacting with human beings, and because we're human beings, it's messy. You know, we'd love for it to be as clean as what happens in a 30-minute sitcom, but that rarely happens. You know, it takes work.
Sure?
Sometimes it can be a little, you know, a little messy, but it's absolutely amazing to see. And, you know, I think what was neat about this particular big dream gathering that we had was it was in my hometown of Des Moines, and that's where this all started. And now we're wildly blessed to get to do big dream gatherings all over the place, but we were finally able to, you know, bring it back. It's been a little bit over a year since we were able to bring it back. And so what was fun was, as I did my little talk at the beginning, you know, a lot of times if we're on a campus someplace else in the country, I can tell stories of people that have had the guts or the boldness to write down a dream and post it and then start to walk it out. But what was fun about this particular big dream gathering was there were a number of people in the room that had come to our first Big Dream gatherings, you know, back in 2006 and 2007 and 2008. And so I was able to point to people, just regular people. You know, I pointed to one gal in the back of the room. And, you know, I said, you know, when she came to one in 2008, she posted a crazy dream for her that she wanted to publish a book. Well, she's published three. And there's another gal that wanted to have a CD of kids' music. And she's now working on her second CD. And, you know, we had a friend that for our original Big Dream gathering, she actually was in Israel at the time. And so she couldn't come. But she emailed us and said, could I post a dream, you know, anyway? And so we posted the dreams. And what was fun was we posted three of her dreams, one of which was to meet the man of her dreams, to first become friends and good friends with him, and then, to become, you know, to fall in love and to eventually marry him. That was her dream. She didn't know him yet, all of that, but she posted it, and we posted it for her. Well, that's been about 6 years ago now from our first Big Dream gathering. Well, she was able to attend this because she now lives in the States again, and she was able to attend this one, and there she sat with her husband, and she's like, that's exactly, you know, this is better than what I hoped for. And, you know, everybody that was in the room were examples of people who had written down dreams and walked them out. All of them admitted that the journey was different than what they expected when they wrote it down. There were elements that were better. There were elements that were tougher. There were elements that were more exciting. There were elements that were scarier. All of those things, the journey was different than what they expected when they wrote it down. But they kept at it. And that was the beauty of it, you know, was that, you know, again, they've walked around, you know, like you're talking, with the puzzle piece above their head. And, you know, so many of them, that none of them could have achieved their goals and their dreams without someone else. And so it was truly that, you know, being open to the wildness of that journey, but then also, you know, being willing to be open to receive some help as well as give help along the way.
Well, and there is that. And there are people like me, I mean, there are a lot of people like me who are so willing to help other people. It's just what we do. It's in our DNA, but we're very uncomfortable asking for or receiving help, and we almost have to train ourselves to respond graciously and thankful. We're thankful. We just have to go, I don't know. I can do it by myself.
Yeah.
I can't.
Exactly. That's what there have been times where we've had to say, receive it, you know, for people to get help. You know, I know I'm that same way. I grew up, you know, a small town kid from Iowa, and, you know, you're quick to give help, but
you don't
always receive help. And so it really is a learning curve to be open to receiving that help and also giving help. So it's so true.
There is. And I have a question for you, too, because I'm a big goal setter. I know a lot of people are. What are the differences between writing out and acting on your goals as a, you know, instead of writing out and acting out your dreams, or where do the two converge?
That's a great point. That's a great question. And for me, I think that I use goals and dreams almost interchangeably.
I was going to say interchangeably. I was saying it in my head when you said it, interchangeably.
Yeah. The thing that I think is interesting is, and I'm kind of a huge fan of language. Like, I'm not great at learning other languages, but I love to dig into kind of the root or the history of different words and try to find, you know, where did they come from and all of those things. But also, how do those words affect people? And one of the things that I've found is that although I, in some ways, use goals and dreams, those two words, somewhat interchangeably, one of the things that I've seen, especially as we've kind of, you know, done a cannonball jump into this whole world of dreaming bigger, one of the things that I see in people is that somehow goal, the word goal, is associated with something with more detail. And that can be really a good thing. At the same time, dream tends to be something that's a little bit more open. And in some ways, that word tends to give people permission to go a little bigger, go a little broader, almost allow themselves to have a blurry edge to a goal. And so that's why we tend to use the word dream more. The challenge, though, is that, you know, as that pendulum swings and you know, you kind of, there's ditches on both sides of those words. The challenge with the word dream sometimes is it also can kind of get poo-pooed as not being specific enough or being kind of pie in the sky, rose-colored glasses or little rainbows and ponies, that kind of thing. And we kind of have to acknowledge that. You know, even this week I was talking about, I love Thomas Edison, and I love his quote, the quote, you know, that he said, genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. And I love that quote in so many ways, but at the same time, I do note a bit of caution around it, just because I think that what I think he was saying was, it is great to dream, but you also have to work. You have to work, and I think we can all acknowledge that. The challenge with that quote, or the danger with that quote, I think, and sometimes I've even seen it happen, even in the world of social media and blogging, is that people start to dismiss the importance of the inspiration. They start to dismiss the importance of the dreaming and goal setting. And so that's where I love the quote from the standpoint of reinforcing the fact that we do have to work. And, you know, he was so much, Thomas Edison was so much about getting it done, you know, dreaming bigger and then getting it done. But I always note just a slight bit of caution around that, because if it truly is down to those numbers, 1 versus 99, that 1% takes so much guts. It takes so much tenacity, because it is so much easier to walk through life in so many ways to never, you know, be inspired to do more, to dream bigger, to set bigger goals and those types of things. So, you know, I always, I love that quote, but I always, you know, link it with a whole lot of caution.
I love Todd. I read everything I can on him. I'm a great history buff. I saw a picture of him. I'll have to find it and send it. You know, that very famous, iconic picture of him with where he's sticking his tongue out. His hair, it's later in life.
Yes.
His hair is very wild, and he's sticking his tongue out. Somebody took that picture and painted the kiss mask on him. I almost died.
Oh, gosh.
So it was Thomas
That's
Edison.
Hilarious.
Gene Simmons. So I will
That's
leave that
hilarious.
In your head for the rest of the day.
That's right. That's
I mean,
hilarious.
I looked at that and I thought, oh, yeah, I wish I had that kind of imagination, but I appreciated it.
That's right.
But no, I agree with you. And I think a lot of these quotes, I mean, clearly they have to be taken out of context. I read quotes and I think, okay, somebody didn't just walk up and say that and walk off. It had to have been part of a bigger conversation.
Absolutely.
So I always try
Absolutely.
With quotes. My brain trick is to try to figure out what the conversation was. And I entertain myself for hours doing that.
Oh, that's great. That's a great mental exercise. I love that.
Well, it really is, because, you know, I'll come up with, you know, one time I'll think, you know, I'll be thinking from a girl's perspective. And the next time I examine that quote, I might be looking at it from a truck driver's perspective, just depending on what kind of mood I'm in. So
exactly.
You're right.
That's great.
You have to be very careful with these things. I mean, take them at face value to a degree. You know, take the inspiration, but wonder what it was really in context to him or her, and what it's in context to you in your life at this moment. And that's where I think the difference comes in.
So agree.
Yeah.
So agree.
Well, you said something about rainbows, butterflies, and little ponies. I like that. where does that come from?
I don't know. I think in some ways it's funny, because one of the things that we have to do is, especially when we talk about dreaming in reality, in the real world, you know, because a lot of times what we'll do is we'll work with individuals. You know, I do a lot of one-on-one coaching, elite life coaching, elite business coaching. We'll do a lot of that. But then we also work with organizations. We work with corporations and associations and all of those. And so I always try to, you know, I love to talk about dreaming, but I also like to root it in the real world. And I was talking with a group yesterday, and it was just an amazing group of economic development folks. And one of the things that I threw out to them as we were talking about, you know, kind of thinking bigger and innovating and dreaming bigger, is I said it has to be rooted in something that Jim Collins has identified as the Stockdale Paradox. Are you familiar with that concept? He introduced it in
Not really,
the book
no.
Good to Great. No, okay. Well, it's a great paradigm. It's taken from an interview that he did with a naval pilot named James Stockdale, who wound up having a lot of success after. But basically, he was a naval pilot that was shot down early in the Vietnam War. And he wound up being a POW in a horrendous POW camp. I mean, all of them probably were, but he was just known for this. What's amazing is he survived 7 years of captivity as a POW when so many others didn't. And there's so many stories from that experience. But Jim Collins was asking him, you know, how did you do it? How did you survive when so many didn't? And he basically started to talk about this kind of tension that he lived in, and that he had to have basically kind of two incongruent thoughts, one of which was that he had to believe that he would not only survive this ordeal, but that he would thrive in his lifetime and someday look back on this time and be grateful for it. At the same time, he had to continue to look at the brutal reality of his current existence. And Jim Collins wound up naming this the Stockdale Paradox. It's basically where leaders, great leaders, are willing to stand in that tension of incredible, unshakable belief that they will prevail, that their organization will prevail, that they as individuals will be able to achieve their goals and dreams. At the same time, still be able to look and deal with the brutal realities of their current existence, tight budgets, tight time frames. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever, new regulations, new laws, you know, whatever those current realities are. It's that, you know, that's where as we dream, we have to dream and be comfortable with standing in that tension of the Stockdale Paradox. We have to believe that those dreams are possible and that we will be able to achieve those. At the same time, we have to look at our current realities and be able to deal with those, not, you know, again, pie in the sky or rainbows and little ponies kind of thing. Right. Like, if I close my eyes, it'll all go away. That won't. You know, you have to deal with it. And I believe
been
that
there,
obviously
done that.
We've got to. Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't
right.
Work.
So, you know, I say, you know, pray hard, work hard, dream big, you know, that's where I believe that we have to be rooted. And, you know, so many times I think that folks want to dismiss kind of the concept of dreaming big or dreaming bigger just because it seems so fluffy. And honestly, if we look at it from that perspective or through that lens, I think that's the lens, you know, especially when we get back to the, you know, the concept of dreaming big, that's the lens that our country was built on.
Oh, absolutely. And you talk about people who have to stand in reality but who can hold fast to their dreams. I watched Bibi Netanyahu yesterday, and I'm telling you, he exemplified everything you just said.
Yeah, I can believe it.
Agree with him or disagree with him?
Yeah,
it was amazing. I mean, this is a man
who
loves his country. He loves, you know, everything about him, but he is deeply rooted in reality. But that doesn't prevent him about dreaming, you know, from dreaming of a much better future for his country. And like him or hate him, you have to really admire his stance.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, and that's a picture of it, is that you know, standing in that belief that we will not only survive but thrive, but also be willing to look at that, you know, your current brutal realities and do your best to deal with those.
And and that's exactly what he did. And I, you know, I just watched it and went, I'll be darned. There was a lot to learn there on so many levels, just from watching the way this man, you know, presented the current truly awful realities, but, you know, why he believes in his country, why he believes in his people. It was really amazing. I mean, it genuinely was. And I remember wishing that more people could present their case like that.
Sure.
But, you know, not everybody can, but he was very eloquent.
No.
And there, like I say, there was a lot to learn from it, whether you believe anything he had to say or not. I think most people should try to watch that and just listen to the passion and the pure drive in his voice. It was pretty interesting from a lot of, you know, just different levels. But
I bet.
Yeah, the dreaming, honestly, this is something I've done all of my life. I didn't have to be taught it, but I never considered it fluff, I have to say. So people do, maybe I was just lucky that way. You know, I'm an introvert. I've always been an introvert. And that was just how I thought, You know, it just didn't occur to me to do anything different. I don't care for TV. I love to read. I'm a true introvert in that most of my pursuits are typically solitary. I'm off doing my own thing. I live in my head. So I guess for me it makes sense to dream. So it's very natural to me. But for people who it's not natural to, are there any kind of steps that you can kind of, you know, say, well, try this and you know, try to maybe retrain your thought process to let those dreams in?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, we've got the book that we wrote called Ignite. It really is, it's a little book that we talk about, you know, that hopefully that will spark people's dreams, and that's what we've heard from people, you know, as they've read it. Plus, it has amazing, I teamed up with a visual artist because, one, I like drawings and pictures, right? But I think also, you know, the pictures and stuff also help to spark a different kind of thinking. But one of the things that we talk in the book about is just the importance of giving yourself permission to dream.
Oh.
That's one of those things that, you know, it seems like it should be a given. At the same time,
does,
I think at a subconscious level, we start to, you know, allow ourselves to dream less and less. And some of that is cultural, but actually, I mean, recently I came across some studies that show that, interestingly enough, there's some neuroimaging studies. I kind of geek out on stuff like this, but there's some neuroimaging
studies
show that the center of our cognitive gravity tends to shift from the imaginative right brain to the logical left brain. And so over time, unless we intentionally kind of train our brain otherwise, we, as we get older, because of that shift, we start to think less creatively and more logically, and we start to move from thinking about our future to thinking about our past. Now, some of that is habit, but some of that is actually kind of the way our brain naturally progresses, and we have to intentionally kind of continue to retrain the brain to think creatively, to think, to dream, to look forward instead of looking back. And so I think in some ways it really does start with saying, I'm going to intentionally give myself permission to dream. And then to also start in that process of being able to say, that my dreams may eventually change my life. But for right now, I'm just going to give myself permission to dream without them having an immediate change on my life. Because that's, I think, one of the other barriers that some people face, either at a conscious or a subconscious level, is they start to think, if I dream, then I will, if I walk this out, then that will make for a need for me to leave my community, move from my home, change jobs, all of those things. And then people, you know, the heart starts to race, they start to sweat, all those things. Now, in some cases, that might be the case. In some cases, that even might need to take place. But that immediate processing, kind of in some ways the pre-processing of that change, starts to shut down the dreaming. So one of the things that we talk about in the book that seems, hopefully it actually seems simple because it is, but it also gives people permission to start smaller but make consistent steps towards that dream, is we ask people, how could you experiment with this dream? Maybe you dream of having a different career. That's great. What, you know, in some ways, what does that dream career look like? What would you love to do? But then also say, how could you experiment with that? What are some ways to experiment that without necessarily quitting your job right now? What are some ways that you could experiment with that to get a taste of it? Is it talking with or shadowing someone that's in that job? And it's hilarious because I talk with, you know, 50-year-olds who are still trying to figure out what they want to do in the, you know, when they grow up, which I'm totally down with. I talk with retirees that are still trying to figure out what they want to do when they grow up. And, you know, back, you know, they would say to a college student, it's smart to go and shadow someone, but to themselves they think, oh, gosh, I don't think I could do that. But it's totally and utterly possible. And people love it, you know, and those types of things. To go and spend a day with someone who's doing it. You know, I'm working with somebody right now that I'm coaching, and they're in the corporate world thinking about moving into the teaching world. It's like, go shadow a teacher. Go find out which classrooms you're attracted to the most. Work it out. You know, find a way to spend an hour, 2 hours. My brother, you know, another example of this is a great story. My brother's actually a missionary in Sydney, Australia. Great, great guy. Had some amazing adventures with this. But recently someone was contacting him and said, I'm thinking about becoming a missionary in the Middle East. And,
Wow.
You know, what do you think I should do? And, you know, my brother's like, wow, you know, that's incredible. It's amazing. But basically he kind of took this concept and said, you know, how could you experiment with that? And they're like, well, what do you mean? And he's like, well, are there folks from the Middle East in your area? And the guy's like, yeah, probably. He's like, well, why don't you go help them where you're at? Get to know them. See how that works.
Right,
see how
right.
that feels. Are you drawn to that? Do you? The more time you spend with the people that you think you may be called to, do you feel that being confirmed? Or do you feel like, wow, I don't like this at all? You know, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Find ways to experiment without completely upsetting the apple cart. You know, there's folks
yeah.
that, you know, I have a friend that is an incredible videographer now, is incredible. But what he would do is he had some base equipment, but instead of trying to go out and buy all of this equipment, he took the experiment concept and said he found a place where he could rent lenses. He could rent equipment for a day or a week. And instead of making these huge investments, he would just rent the equipment for a couple of days. And he figured out what he liked, what he didn't. And it helped him to start formulating a business where he still rents some of his equipment, but he's bought a lot of it now, but he just continued to experiment, which also helps you to kind of limit your risk until you're ready to make the next bigger step. And so that's what we always encourage people. You know, we ask people, okay, you've got that dream. How could you experiment? What are some small but significant steps that you could take where in some ways you put that lab coat on and experiment with it? See if you really like it. See if you enjoy it. Before you quit your job, before you move out of town, all those things, find some ways to experiment and see what you think.
I love that idea of renting. I mean, I think, and I never thought of that, but, you know, that makes perfect sense, especially anymore equipment and technology changes so quickly.
Well, exactly,
and you might
right.
as well,
you know,
rent
you,
it.
You, and... Absolutely. And that can also be this huge, it gets back to where we started the conversation. You know, money becomes this huge wall. And for him,
right.
you know, to buy one of these lenses where he really, you know, he was doing a specific thing. He was doing a video shoot, and he thought, oh, man, I'd really love to try out this lens, and I think it really would allow me to do this, and it was going to be a $2,000 investment. Well, he found this place. He could rent it for $100, and he was able to do it. And then it really confirmed he loved the shot. He loved the angle. And then he wound up taking on another job that helped to pay for that lens, and he did it
right.
with confidence as opposed to wondering. And there's been a couple of times where he's rented something and realized, oh, man, that didn't help me at all. It was
right.
more cumbersome or problematic, and so he didn't go that way. And it's a great example, though, of how we can experiment. We had a gal come that wanted to learn how to race sailboats. She came to a big dream gathering, college student. And interestingly enough, someone in the room was a very successful entrepreneur, saw the dream and said, hey, I just upgraded boats. Do you want my old sailboat?
Did she
so all
want
of a sudden,
it as a gift or buy it?
He gave it to her.
Oh.
He gave her a sailboat. So she came up to me. Here's this, you know, she's a college
my
senior.
Goodness.
She comes up shaking. I just got a sailboat. And then a couple of minutes later, she's like, I have a sailboat. You know, like it set in, like, oh, my gosh, I've got a sailboat. But what was great was she had to figure out a series of different experiments. She had to figure out,
right.
okay, before she could even take the boat, she had to go take some classes on, you know, how do you take care of a boat? She had to, what was interesting is she had to join a yachting club for her
right.
school. And what was interesting for her in this case was that she was a graduating senior. Most of the students that were in this club were freshmen and sophomore, and she got there and she's like, you know how it is. I mean, seniors don't hang out with freshmen. She had to just bite the bullet, right? And realize, you know what, I want to learn this. And she's like, it could have been embarrassing. She's like, who cares? She's like, it's my dream. And she could just figure out all these different ways to experiment so that then she was ready to walk into this big dream.
How did she find the mooring fees and the maintenance? Those boats are not cheap to
maintain.
Well,
what's beautiful about it is that she actually, her grandparents live on a lake. And they have a dock and all of these things. So there were plenty of logistics to still work out, but it really was something that, and this has been a lifetime dream for her. She'd grown up on a lake and, you know, taught kids how to water ski and lived, you know, lived on boats, but never had learned to sail. So she knew, you know, going into this dream, she had already had a good foundation, but it still was pretty incredible. And in some ways, all exciting and scary and all those things all at the same time. And that's so much of what happens when people dream big.
I'm just blown away by that story. I mean, to walk into some place, say this is my dream, and walk out with a boat is amazing.
It's pretty incredible. And it speaks to a couple of different things. One, it speaks to the power of what happens when we write our dreams down. Now, you know, we never promise, like, you know, you write down you want a boat, you get a boat. At the same time, that wouldn't have happened if she didn't have the guts to do it. The other part
of it is
that on the other side is to see the person who was giving it. You know, to him, yeah, I'm sure it was still very significant. I mean, it was a 21-foot boat, right? But to him, you know, it was to see his face and see the satisfaction of being able to help someone make their dream happen. I mean, that is the picture of addiction. It's the picture of a good addiction, something you want to do more of, because you could tell it was one of those things where he was like, you wanted to turn around and give everybody a boost like that. And that's what we see so many times. And you know, sometimes somebody can give away a boat, but other times it's just encouraging someone with their dream. I mean, we have a lot of people that come that we have, you know, we have homeless people all the way to multimillionaires come to Big Dream Gathering.
Really?
And I'll tell you, sometimes those homeless people writing down an encouraging word saying, I believe in this dream, it's beautiful, is just like giving somebody $1 million because they haven't had anybody encourage them in their dream. And so, you know, sometimes you got a boat to give away and sometimes you just have an encouraging word to give away. But those, a lot of times, can have that same value just because they're so priceless.
They can. They honestly can. I can't tell you how many times just an encouraging nod or a smile has just, for some reason, just made me feel better all day long. Yeah, it just
happens
that way. Yeah.
It's so true.
I know in the book, Mitch, you talk about the intellectual immune system, and I'd love to hear more about that. I mean, look, I'm watching what's going on in our country with young people, older people all across the world. And I don't mind telling you, I'm scared to death. And then, you know, I have to spend a good part of my, well, anymore, I just won't even turn on the news. It's just too horrible. But, you know, I did want to watch Mr. Netanyahu yesterday, so I did take that time. But there are some things going on in our country right now, in our world right now. I don't recognize any of this, and I don't like it. And I think so much of it is intellectual.
Well, it's interesting, and basically the intellectual immune system, you know, as we talk about it, we introduce it in this book, the intellectual immune system is a theory that I have, a belief that I have, in that I believe that our intellect has an immune system similar to our body's immune system. No, not medically, but metaphorically. So basically, I believe that we tend to reject ideas that come from outside us, almost like we reject an organ that was transplanted. So I'll give you an example. I have a friend that needed a new kidney. He was sick. The doctors diagnosed it. His mom was like a superhero, just a true hero. She was a perfect match, stepped up, gave him a kidney. And even though it was a perfect match, the surgeon did a stellar job. You know, surgery went off without a hitch. What did his body naturally do?
Well, it didn't want it. It wasn't his.
Exactly, it rejected it. So, that's because it came from outside. And I believe we do the same thing with ideas. Now, if I'm in front of a big group of people, what I'll do is I'll say, you know, there's all sorts of studies to actually back this up. But what I do is I rely on the audience's experience. So I'll say, like, has anyone read a book? Maybe it's a self-help book or a leadership book, and there's 7 habits or 5 principles, and you're reading that thing and going, oh, my gosh, this guy knows me inside and out. She must have a camera in my office. She knows my team inside and out. I am committing to do this. Or maybe a diet book, and you're like, oh, man, these look so good, and look at these people got all skinny. I am so doing this, right? And you commit your ever-loving heart out that you are
right.
following through on this. But then a week later, you're like, what was the sixth and seventh habit again? Or what were that, you know, the second and third principles? Or what was that name of that doggone diet book again? If you're like,
yeah, and I'm busy.
Right?
Can I come back to that later?
And it's where we tend to reject those things
right.
because even though we wanted them, they came from outside us. And so over time, our intellect starts to attack them and shut them down. Well, that author's close, but that doesn't really work for us. That author's never walked in our shoes. He's never been to our side of town. He's never walked in my school. He's never been in my business. So, yeah, it's close, but it's not right. So I think that our intellect starts to shut that down. So the only thing that we can do to overcome the intellectual immune system is ownership. To take ownership of an idea. And so that's why in our book, we're pretty light on instruction. We're pretty heavy on questions. So basically,
oh.
we'll ask people questions to take them through a process, but it is then a process that they own. Because if you own it, you are so much less likely to shut it down because you created it. So instead of good advice
with
from a parent or good advice from a friend where you're like, man, I think I'll take that. I'll heed that advice. And then you forget about it a day later. It's something you create. It comes from inside you. And so, therefore, you own it. The intellectual immune system doesn't shut it down. And you walk it out. It's great. We actually heard from a parent recently who had given their book, the book to their son that was in college. And he informed them that he was going to change his major, and that all of a sudden made them really nervous. But then he slides the book across and basically walks them through his entire plan. And they're blown away. And, you know, it's one of those where they tried to give him advice left and right. Like, well, maybe you should do this. If you talk to this person, all these kinds of things. Well, he slides the book across and says, this is who I'm going to be talking to. This is who I've already talked to. This is what I want to achieve next year. This is what I want to achieve in the next 3 years. All these things, the whole thing, he owned. And he has been walking it out for the last year, had some really neat breakthroughs here recently. But when they told us about it, they were like, it's all about that daggone intellectual immune system. All our advice has been shut down. But once he owned it, then he took it and ran with it. And he's been running with it ever since.
And you know, what you're saying makes perfect sense to me because, I mean, I will listen to a lot of other – I do. I read. I don't necessarily listen so much as I will read a lot of stuff. I just process information better that way. And I'll go, oh, well, that makes perfect sense. And then an hour later, I'm going – and I'm pitching an argument with them in my brain. It's like, oh, no.
Exactly right.
You can't tell
exactly
me what to do.
Right. Exactly right.
Me.
And that's why, you know – I think that it's one of those things where so many great books are written and then wind up sitting on a shelf because, you know, it pinged a person, it, you know, planted a seed or whatnot, but the intellectual immune system shut the idea down before it could ever take root.
I love that because it happens to me. I mean, I'll read something and it lights me up. I'm like, oh, that's right. But then I reject it at some level, not outright. I'm sneaky about it. I have found that I'm very
exactly right. Well, yeah, that intellectual immune system is sneaky.
Yeah,
it'll even justify itself.
No.
It will totally justify itself. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, well, you wouldn't want to embarrass yourself.
Well,
you know,
all
those, and there's just so many different things. So some ways, what this does is this also wraps back around to the experiment thing is that so many times, you know, we'll say, listen, if you read someone's book, for example, you know, you just came across a great book and you read it and you say, oh, man, I'm so doing this. Instead of committing to that author's system or plan or seven habits or whatever it is, ask yourself, how could I experiment with this? How could I make it my own? And let your brain go to work on that. Because right now your brain's working on, how do I fit that into my life? Well, it's not going to fit well. Most ideas don't fit good off the rack. You have to customize it. You have to tailor the idea for your life. And we never get to that question. So if you ask the question, how can I tailor this to fit me? then that gives your brain, that intellectual immune system, a whole new question to wrestle with, as opposed to why doesn't this fit me? Why isn't this working? So that's what we introduced the concept in Ignite, just because we don't want it to be another book that winds up sitting on the shelf. We actually, there's space in the book to write, to plan, to do all those things. We want people to write all over these things, although there's so many great pictures in it. It's full color, too. So some people, they buy one copy to keep nice, and then they buy one copy to write all over. But that's one of the differences, is we want people to write all over this. We don't want them to emerge from this saying, oh, man, Mitch gave me a great plan. In some ways, my goal is them to emerge from reading the book going, look at all I got done.